Greetings, everyone. This is Christopher Rudy with Cosmic Love, and it's my great pleasure to have Dr. Christine Page on the show today. Christine began her medical practice in London in 1978 and combined it with homeopathy in 1989. She's an international seminar leader on subtle energy and energy medicine, having created a three-level training program to enhance the power of intuition for healthcare professionals. She's the author of Frontiers of Health, How to Heal the Whole Person, and Spiritual Alchemy. In 2008, Christine had another book published called 2012 and the Galactic Center, The Return of the Great Mother. One of my favorite quotes from this book, which I've used quite often this last year in my writings for my talk show and for my email list, is, I quote, "Congratulations, you are among a select group of souls who won the lottery to be here on this planet at this time. The prize not only ensures you a front row seat, but also the unique opportunity to co-create the future of the human race. This is a time to remember," unquote. So this book on 2012 in the Galactic Center, The Return of the Great Mother, is one of the best-selling shift-age books of this last year. And now Christine is coming out with the sequel called The Healing Power of the Sacred Woman. And this, I consider this one of the most must-read books for any man or woman intent on healing with a balanced feminine or masculine side. The healing power in this book is of great assistance for the shift to the next level of wholeness, homeostasis, and healing. And in the tradition of Joseph Campbell, Christine goes deep into ancient and modern myths of the Great Mother as a metaphor for sacred women. And there are extraordinary lessons here for men who are conscientious about honoring their feminine side, and vice versa. The healing power of the sacred woman includes new scientific understanding of our DNA, the pineal gland, and mastery of relationships at the heart of the conscious evolution process. Christine, I'm honored to have you on Cosmic Love today. Thank you for being with us.
Well, thank you so much, Christopher, for inviting me. I feel I'm glowing already by what you've been saying, and I am so touched that a man should be so connected to my book on women.
It just makes
me think that there are so many wonderful men out there who really want to both encourage their own feminine, but also to support women to become more in tune with their own sacred womanhood.
Oh, I'm making an appeal to men. You know, when I do the news release goes out to about 5,500 people on my email list, you know, for the show, and I'm making an appeal to men with this book because I think this is the time when, you know, men are supposed to integrate and balance with their feminine side and vice versa. So most of the material in the book looks like it's directed at men, but this is why I began this Cosmic Love radio show 5 years ago. I wanted to integrate better with my feminine side. Wasn't sure what it was, but I figured by having a show called Cosmic Love and interviewing people on all kinds of cosmic stuff, I'd get a better idea.
That's a bold man who just steps off the end of the plank and is ready to dive into his feminine.
Well, yeah, I'm kind of metaphysical in that regard. Astrology, psychology is something I've really, you know, got into, and my psychology is very pioneering, innovative, and new frontier. And you've written a lot about that. Your book, 2012, Galactic Alignment, is extraordinary. There's a lot of parts of that book that I would consider anyone into the shift process that's going on, you know, the big shift in consciousness and energies and accelerating rate of change. That book is just that's a key handbook. You know, I really believe that. And you've gone through quite a journey from healing the world one-on-one as a holistic practitioner, and then through international seminars, and now through your books. So what led you to write 2012, The Galactic Center, and how has the Great Mother returned with your book, The Healing Power of the Sacred Woman?
Yes, those are fantastic questions. I feel always that I was brought up in a family who were very much enjoyed the spiritual and the psychic and the healing, complementary healing, other forms of healing. So I was very fortunate to be given that broad spectrum of thinking that allowed me to investigate things and to look at subjects that maybe not my classmates weren't looking at. And so
in your formative years.
Right in my formative years. So in my sitting room at home, we would have people coming in and talking about ETs and crystals. And, and I mean, Von Daniken was in our home, you know, back in the 60s.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And I was very fortunate. And what I had was not parents. I will say my mother and father were very down to earth. But my mother was a seeker and a searcher, and so am I. And so was my father, and he often used to say, you know, if your mother thinks it's right, it must be. So
smart man.
Nobody ever told me that you shouldn't think outside the box. You know, there wasn't any boundaries. And I, as a child, would go to psychics or listen to psychics speak on the stage, and they maybe bring through a 5,000-year-old Egyptian. And I would think, well, this person is making more sense than my teachers. and my parents would just say, if it feels right inside, then follow it. So I never had any boundaries in terms of, well, this person, you should listen to this person because they're an authority figure. It was always, no, listen to what your heart says.
Yeah.
And so the writing of my books and my 2012 book came along, and it felt like it was time to discuss and to talk about this shift in consciousness that was so prevalent, and certainly about how the Great Mother has to be a part of this, or that she is a part of it, and that we as humans need to understand where we've come from, because it feels that we stay in such a small, limited awareness of, or what country do you come from, and you know, where were you born? And these things, it's like, that really doesn't matter. What matters is, where did you come from within your soul? And what's the journey been on that? What has your journey been like? My wonderful kahuna friend used to say, all you need to know is, who was sitting in front of you when you came, who behind you, and who beside you? And it never made sense. He always was trying to say to me, really recognize that your journey is your unique soul journey, and nothing is ever wasted. And that it's not relevant what stars I might have come from or what universe or where, but what has been my journey, because it gives me a sense of my past, what interests me. So
yeah.
I'm saying here is, yes, I went into medicine. Am I a doctor? Well, I trained as a doctor, but I consider myself a messenger, and I consider myself a healer. But it's not a label I have to walk around with. These were just tools I picked up as I went through my journey.
Yeah.
And that's important for everybody to know.
So you came into basically an understanding of your soul contract, and it was more on the path of knowing, intuitive knowing, rather than lockstep, linear, left brain, letter of the law that killeth the spirit of the law that we see in Western, dominant in Western civilization so much.
You're right. And, you know, I never lost my connection to the other worlds. And now, as a child, I didn't think, wow, I've never lost my connection. I thought everybody saw everything and had a strong connection to the spirit world. I've never known what it was like not to have guidance, or to not tap into that energy.
Yeah.
And I've always, you know, I had a problem because I could see everybody's energy, and the problem was that I didn't know how to differentiate between their energy and mine, and I would faint, you know, just to get away from it.
Yeah.
Which was kind of ironic. I went into medicine because it was the place where people would have a lot of feelings, and I couldn't afford to faint.
Well, medicine is what needs healing.
Oh, you're totally right. You're totally right. And I loved because I have this curiosity. I love medicine from the point of its curiosity.
Yeah.
I love doing surgery. I love doing pediatrics because everything to me was a deepening of my awareness of how people tick.
Yeah.
And not just from a mental point of view, but my ability to really be present with people. You know, at 3 a.m. sitting on their bed at home was a gift to me, which I think most doctors have no clue
Yeah.
But really, if they want to help people heal, they have to be with them, not at some end of a bed and not knowing who this person is.
Most people don't realize that the prominent doctors here at the beginning of the this last century were the homeopaths, and they were the most respected and honored doctors. They were the ones that were totally tuned in and to all the different emotional, physical, and knew their patients intimately, you know, as far as their whole mental, spiritual, makeup, and that this was. I mean, I worked with Dr. Panos, who was one of the, she was president of the National Center of Homeopathy in Washington, D.C.,
right.
and it was amazing when I learned working with her, and she was my family doctor back in Ohio, and raised my kids with her with homeopathic remedies, and the stories in her book, Homeopathy in the Home, you know, how to raise, it's a classic, and then to work with her, you might say in my formative years, was what, this 40 years ago, 30 years ago? And and to learn about the real history of medicine in the United States and how the homeopathic doctors were working with subtle energy, you know, really quantum medicine, you know, energy medicine. And the whole paradigm of has now shifting again back towards the energies of health rather than the chemistry of disease. So I realized that what you've really tuned into is quantum medicine, and the quantum field and this whole conscious evolution thing with the subtle energies that are healing.
Yes, so much. We have very similar paths, you and I.
I'm really intrigued when I see it in print. A lot of the things you're writing about, excuse me, is from a holistic perspective.
Yes.
And the way that integrates, you might say, all the compartmentalized thinking that's, you know, in the box, how it transcends that and integrates, you know, this understanding of wholeness and homeostasis and healing. And your section in the book really fascinated me regarding DNA and the pineal gland and DMT and conscious evolution. That section of the book I thought was really extraordinary because it really brings science into this understanding of the sacred woman and the healing power of the divine feminine, which to me has been the understanding of the nurturing, the raising up, you might say, of our consciousness, just like as the raising up and giving birth to a child is like giving birth to consciousness. And the way you work that theme in the book, again, I'd consider that required reading for any male working on getting his act together.
Well, I think, you know, I wanted to really specify, because the pineal gland at the top of the head, for those who may not know it, a small gland that sits actually outside the brain, but that for a woman, there are many ways in which the pineal gland can get stimulated to release DMT, which is this, we could say, a hallucinogenic drug, but it allows us to move out of our ordinary world and into the extraordinary world.
Yeah.
And for a woman, that happens at various times in her life. One is during labor, or the extremes of labor, when she certainly can stimulates that pineal gland and has those blissful experiences amongst the painful ones, but there are those bliss experiences. But she also does it during her menses, and that's an important time that many women don't understand that. And then again at menopause. And I think, and then, of course, at orgasm. And I think for a woman to understand that, for her to, that's a very normal thing for her to have, which is the lighting up of her pineal gland. And men, of course, have their pineal gland lit up as well during orgasm. And for us to recognize that sex is not just something which stops at the loins and the groins, but truly is one of allowing that serpent energy to rise up and to literally hit that pineal gland and to take us into that place of bliss and oneness. It's a magical experience.
It's to me, I got it into the book DMT, The Spirit Molecule.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been studying this conscious evolution thing sometime, and I saw this in your book, and the synchronicity was last night. I was watching a YouTube video of a 12-12-2012 lecture by Graham Hancock on this subject.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes, I know him well, yes.
And I'll share the link to that video to anyone who asks for it. But I found it fascinating while reading your book on the healing power of sacred women that Grant Hancock was talking about the same awakening of civilization millennia ago as DMT-rich plants were used worldwide in many different cultures to connect with the mother goddess of the planet. That was his words.
Ah, wonderful, wonderful. Isn't that fantastic? That's
synchronicity.
And you know, I also to recognize that that mother, as you know, is, we often say the Earth Mother, the Mother Earth.
Yeah.
But the ancient people saw it as the Milky Way, and the universe was female.
Yeah.
And that this is only very recent in the last 2,000 years that we've made God masculine, or we've created this sky god, or we allowed this sky god to become the ruler of our skies.
Yeah.
And the ancient people never saw that. They didn't see it was God or goddess, but we come from the goddess, and she is the Milky Way, and she is the universe. And it is our masculine that then focuses on that energy and brings it down to us. So the masculine is the lightning rod that allows it to happen. But we mustn't say mother is down and father is up. Everything is interconnected.
Yeah, that was intuitively understood to the ancients, and astrology was spirituality and psychology, and of course it became secularized as astronomy, and they threw the baby out with the bathwater.
Oh, didn't they just? I think that's what. It's amazing that astrology was first, as you say, Andy.
Yeah.
And you think before we all watched television, we used to just watch the stars.
Yeah.
And we've lost touch with our outer connections. If you ask a child where they've come from, you know, they apart from maybe thinking it comes from the womb. But the people, ancient people, understood we came, our souls came from many different dimensions. Many different dimensions.
Yeah, this understanding of, and it's coming back, you know, that the souls are incarnating here from, you know, all over the universe, and there is no time or space in the quantum field. You know, it's like, there is a divine order to all this, and there's, of course, the harmonics of each soul coming into a body at a place and a time and a family. You know, it's no accident. You know, it's like we have soul. Different people have different soul contracts, and came here with different attainments, momentums. You know, from anciently.
And we all chose to be here, and I think that was the quote you took from my book. Nobody's here by accident. Nobody's here just to kind of say, "Well, I'll get through life and leave." No, this was a very precious life that you chose to have. This life.
Yeah.
And that it was the completion of a 26,000-year-old cycle. And you are completing karma, which doesn't have to be negative. It can be what is it you always wanted to finish or do that you've never quite got round to doing. This is the life to do it.
Yeah.
You know?
There was so many highlights in your book that would hang on and just kind of tune into this cosmic perspective. And actually, both of your books kind of reference in that perspective of galactic alignment, with the photon belt, that our solar system travels through, across the galactic plane, and I've talked about this in former shows with other authors, and this understanding of how there's a surge in the field, the source field or the energy field, the quantum field, of not just the Earth electromagnetics, and which really is the cause. Behind the cause of, you might say, global warming, you know, the whole electromagnetics of the Earth are shifting. But it's also the, you know, it's like our DNA, our consciousness, the spontaneous evolution of, you know, of cells and just an accelerated rate of change with this shift consciousness awakening process.
Right.
And I'm fascinated with this in your book, the way you address it from different perspectives and this understanding of the Milky Way. As And your description of that, the womb of the Divine Mother in the Milky Way, could you go into that a little bit, you know, the way you understand
it? I will do. And, you know, I'll step one little back so I can just bring this forward, is that, as you know and your readers, the listeners will know, is that we had a very quiet period of the sun around 2008 and almost 2010. And that was very unusual. You know, we're always talking about the overactivity of the sun. But when the sun's activity went to almost zero, that was when we were more in tune with the galactic energy than ever before, because the sun usually protects us from that. So I felt that was more significant than everybody thinking, oh, we're going to be burning up with the sun. No, no, the quietness of the sun allowed the galaxy or the galactic energy to become more powerful. And hence, you know, we were talking about global warming and other things. As you say, the consciousness of the galaxy has been hitting us much harder. And from my perspective, the galaxy, or it's not my perspective, the Maya saw the Milky Way as the Great Mother. And it's quite interesting, the Greeks tell the story of how the Milky Way was called the Milky Way because of Hera, the great mother goddess, pushing off Hercules from her breast, and her milk sprayed across the sky, and hence the Milky Way. It's also why we call it galaxy, because gala is milk. So there's all of this about milk in the sky.
And that's where the Milky Way concept came from.
It really was. And so it was the great mother in the sky who has her breast ready for you, but if you try to get there by wrong means, you know, slyly, you're going to get pushed off.
Yeah.
The way they see it is that if you do have the opportunity to see a night where you can see the galaxy, and of course you only see 3% of it any time, but you can see it, you can also see this very strong black line that runs across the galaxy. It's the best way I can describe it. And that's actually made up of interstellar dust. And that is known as the dark road or the black road or the dark rift of
dark
the Milky
rift.
Way.
Uh-huh.
And that dark rift, the black road, was seen as the vagina of the Great Mother.
Huh.
And the alignment that happened on the 21st of December last year was that on the solstice, the winter solstice, there was an alignment between ourselves, the sun, and that dark rift. And that was why that date was so special. It was believed at that point, the black road, it was as if we were completely in reference and aligned to the galactic center because of this alignment.
Yeah, there's what is it, 250 billion suns in our galaxy, are all like in a galactic plane, and we
That's
orbit
right.
up and across it in a cycle, 25,800 years. And it's interesting, this understanding of the energetics of our entire solar system has been intensifying, and that changes on all the planets. Almost, I think, it's two-thirds of the planets in our solar system, the inner planets towards the sun, have been dramatically changing as there's been this surge in the energetics of the photon belt, or the alignment with these 250 billion stars in a plane that is more intensified because they're in alignment. In astrology, you know, alignment, there's a merging of the energies.
Right.
And it's, to me, I'm just amazing how this process is a natural cycle. And when I say that, it's just like this is, and it's rare. I mean, this is a very unique time.
Yes, it really is, and that's why, even though the Mayan calendar was seen as just a 5,000-year-old calendar, we actually were definitely finishing a 26,000-year cycle, which is five times that 5,000.
Five times that 5,000.
Because they've had five ages, so really. People were saying, oh, well, it's maybe a 5,000. No, this is a 26,000 years, if not even bigger cycle than that. Some people were talking about a 52,000 years.
Yeah.
And as you said, it was a unique alignment.
A very unique alignment. It was going on 15 years before, of course, it's 2012, and 15 years after So we're in a stage, really interesting stage. Graham Hancock actually has a large portion of that video I was talking about the whole procession of the equinox from the perspective mm-hmm. of Egypt, sacred temples around the world. I mean, this processional cycle has been like the thematic key in ancient architecture and it was brilliant to see that in the context of your book, because, you know, the way you framed it from your last book to this book, this understanding of there is an energy that is actually a nurturing energy. It's a cooperative, I call it coordination, ordained or co-creation with Mother, Father, God, or Mother God. But the nurturing energy is a feminine attribute, and this raising up of consciousness, the raising up of knowing, intuitive knowing of the connection to everything, which is what really cultures community, the communication process that we've got with this instant everywhere interactive internet. And I'm just this time and this theme, I really think of raising up, giving birth and raising up consciousness.
Well, it certainly is. And if we look at the procession of the equinoxes and we still being in the Piscean age, which we are, and we're not yet in the Aquarian age, I feel that one of the big challenges we have is because the Piscean age really is the age of oneness, what you're speaking about, that connection to allness. There are no veils. The veils fell now between the dimensions. So the opportunities now are immense for us to know ourselves in our fullness and in the oneness of connecting to everything. And that's where we are. However, the Piscean age has been marred by the very delusion or illusion of Pisces.
Uh-huh.
And instead of the two fish which swim in opposite directions coming in harmony, we've actually created separation.
Yeah.
And the challenge for us, because we have about, if we're right, about 90 years left of the Piscean age, is how do we move beyond polarization? And whereas you and I know that we can be in that oneness, the very thing you were speaking about is meeting with our feminine, meeting with our masculine. The marriage of opposites is what is so important at this time. And it is that when we marry together two opposites, we move more easily into that fullness. It's a bit like the sexual act. When we are come together with two of us, we can move into that oneness through the pineal gland much more easily.
Yeah,
so we are moving in the direction, but we have got these challenges, which is, especially, let's say, in our culture, the desire to constantly polarize everything into, are you a member of this club or that club? Do you support that party or this party? And that has got to stop. We have to move beyond that thinking that always creates fear and separation.
Yeah, Graham Hancock talks about the universality of duality.
Yes.
and overcoming that. And polarity is two in one, and duality is kind of divide and conquer energies. And the masculine, the linear left brain masculine energies tend to be more compartmentalized.
Yeah,
and
right.
And the right brain, holistic, spherical, spiritual, intuitive, and under the influence of DMT, and the spirit molecule, there's more of this just knowing of where there's imbalance and then how to come back into balance. And that...
Exactly, and we need to do it, we all need to keep reminding ourselves of that in our daily life.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we can again even get separated between the spiritual and the physical.
Yeah.
So it's recognizing how do we, that's what 2012 was about, was bringing heaven onto earth. And the Incas said 2012 will be the first time that human beings actually live on this earth.
Yeah.
Because we've always lived in this separation.
So the sense of our humanity, in a global village with an instant everywhere interactive new technology of connection, is almost like a metaphor for this connection with the divine mother. When I
absolutely.
That,
Yeah.
And that's something I've been coming around to. And I know there's been a lot of quite a few luminaries like yourself and Grant Hancock and others that have gone through the and Joseph Campbell is one of my favorite authors on the subject of the ancient myths as a metaphor for a process that Jung referred to of individualization or integration with basically, you know, of wholeness, not left brain, right brain, or upper brain, lower brain, or forebrain, or rear brain, but the whole brain, wholeness.
Exactly. And that's, you know, the great, if I come back to the Great Mother, maybe I also need to just speak about this. You know, so she is represented by the Milky Way, and the galactic center, which is a black hole, is her heart. But she's also got a white hole at the same place. They have to exist together. So she both asks us to enter in through her vagina into the black hole and dissolve ourselves, so dissolve our egos, you could say, so that she will give birth to newness. And that is the power of the feminine. So the feminine has three faces. She has the virgin, which is about new ideas, intuition, listening to our intuition, being inspired. She has the face of the mother, which probably is the best known face, which is that of caring and nurturing. But the third face is the one that most people have difficulty with, because it's the face of the dark goddess or the crone. And the crone and the dark goddess is the breaking down of the old and allowing ourselves to be surrendering to the Great Mother, to be disintegrated so that we may actually go back to our native and natural state so that we can be born again. And so as the Great Mother, and especially at this time, I and others, and I'm sure you know of people yourself, who have all been facing fairly big challenges and maybe even chaos in your life, deaths, illness, problems with, we saw it in, you know, in the financial markets, in work situations. And this has all been happening partly because Pluto is in Capricorn, but Pluto is actually the Great Mother who has been going through us all and saying, what needs to die so you can give birth to something new? And I want to say that when that happens, that's probably one of our most spiritual moments, those dark nights of the soul, where we feel everything is crashing that we knew and that we're being asked to go into the underworld, into the unknown. But that is one of the most powerful places to go, because when we actually surrender everything, that is the point where other things can come through and we can really get to know who we are.
Yeah, I was reading about that third phase as you were talking about, you know, the crone. And basically I could see how when people get stuck, you know, and they're disconnected from nature, you get bitch slapped by the crone.
Yes, well, but I also want to say, I think she's, for a woman, it's the menses, it's the bleeding.
Yeah.
So it's a very vital part. It's the nighttime, it's winter. So it's not that you've done anything wrong. And I think that's what often happens with the dark night of the soul. You can be going along really happily, and all of a sudden, vroom, you feel dead inside. And you can't make sense of it. You think, well, my life is good. Why am I feeling sad or down or not encouraged or not enthusiastic about my life?
Disconnected,
Disconnected. And it's not that you're doing something wrong. It's literally, okay, this is a good time to die. this is a good time to go into yourself. And we don't give enough credence for that. And that's why so many people are on antidepressants. Because doctors don't understand that if I came in to see you as a doctor, as a homeopath, and I said, hey, I just need off, I need 6 months off because I'm just going into one of those dark nights.
Yeah.
I should be able to go and have a walkabout or take time out to find myself, as you say, to reconnect to who am I. And it's not because I have done something wrong. It's more because that phase of my life is finished.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, it's the midlife crisis, it's the crisis that happens when the children go off to college. They're normal crises where you're actually saying, okay, now who are we now the children have gone? And we should all take time out and just go and find ourselves. And then we can start again. But we're not geared to understand that when someone needs to shut themselves away or to go into their cave or to take time out, they're not sick. They're actually very healthy. They're saying, wow, thank you. I'm just going to take this time away so I can really find myself again. And then I can be more effective in the world.
And there's no...
This is important.
There's no drug that can treat a spiritual disconnect.
No.
You know, and so much of the future shock that people are suffering with the accelerated rate of change is that their comfort zone and what I call their BS, their belief system,
belief systems
go through change, and it's like the ego will do anything to maintain the status quo of the same old, same old.
Yes.
And so then it's just like spiritual growth. That whole process is accelerating. The issue is being forced, you might say. And there's no drug that can, whether it's future shock or the sense of disconnect, or as Buddha said, you know, the sense of separation that causes all suffering. There's no drug for that.
and you know, there really isn't. And often the drug actually makes you separate more.
Makes it worse. It makes you psychotic.
Psychotic. Absolutely.
That's one of the side effects of those what do they call them? Psychotropics, or
yes.
But one of the side effects is they make it worse.
Well, I have to say, I was listening to a program about that, and I was shocked by how many of the people who had been violent in our society had actually been on these drugs and, you know, may well have been the cause of them.
Pretty much all the shooters, the mass shootings.
I was listening to, and then the same statement was that 20% of women are on antidepressants, and I thought, oh my God.
Yeah. You
know, they're not helping people. They're making them feel, you know, the drugs themselves are having an effect, and they're making you feel that something's wrong with you when it really isn't wrong with
you. That's right. And the way they push Ritalin and all these drugs on kids, you know, it's and the effect of that is sometimes I think it's a plot out of hell, because it just, you know, it actually, you know, the side effects compound the problem, and down the road, of course, you know, for the drug companies, that means they can push more drugs for other, you know, either mental or, and so I think all that's coming out in the wash right now. The great unveiling, so to speak, is all this stuff. But boy, the internet has just been. And again, that's challenged everyone's BS or belief systems, you know.
Exactly. And, I think the internet, as you say, has allowed people to see things and as nothing is hidden. And also, though, not to give your power away, because listening to yourself is very important. So that as we're watching or reading something on the internet, it's very important for us to kind of reflect it back to ourselves and say, okay, where does this sit? How do I feel about this?
Yeah, and I think that's where the future shock comes in for a lot of people, because there's so much information overload, you know.
Yes.
It just can be just as devastating as a sensory deprivation.
Yes, exactly. And so I think that we're not lacking information on our planet.
No. And really, the crisis is a crisis in consciousness. You know, how do you process all that information?
Exactly. And you know, it could be very easy to lose yourself into information. And again, that would just feed that left brain and keep you away from the wholeness of the situation, which sometimes just requires you to sit out and watch the stars or... Quiet, you know, with pets, go out into nature. That's one of the best places to actually connect.
Well, we're very fortunate here in this remote rural valley in Montana where I'm at. Boy, I tell you what, some of the clear nights out here, it's so brilliant, crystal clear. It's like being in an observatory, you know.
Wow, it's beautiful.
It's one of the blessings here. Well, I'm going to do a little station break. This is Christopher Reed with Cosmic Love. I'm talking with Dr. Christine Page about her book, actually a couple of her books, 2012, Galactic Center and the Healing Power of Sacred Women. And I'm going to give a little plug here for the Swedish pollen extract, which is a product that kind of corresponds to one of the chapters in your book, Christine. You have a section on bees and the queen bee that we'll want to talk to here in a minute. The Swedish pollen extract is actually standardized nutraceutical grade royal jelly. 80 years ago, researchers in Sweden developed a way to harvest select pollens that have the ideal micronutrient profile for humans and then extract the husks, these microscopic pollen husks, like the bees do when they collect pollen and they suck out the nucleic material in those microscopic pollen grains, and they store that, and that's what makes royal jelly. And the Swedes also developed a way to pre-digest the raw material, so it's hypoallergenic. They use live enzymes. The bees just mix their bee saliva with it. But this Swedish pollen extract is I've been brokering into the United States here for about 30 years, and it's, like I say, harvested without the bees for quality controls. It's extracted without chemicals, and it's pre-digested with live enzymes to make the richest source of RNA, DNA, genetic material for genetic repair in the food chain. And let me do something here. So what I thought I would do is reference that. If people are interested, I have more information on the A Cosmic Love homepage on the Swedish pollen extract. So would you talk a little bit, Christine, about the queen bee metaphor or model or myths in your book?
I will, and I kind of have to tell the story around it. I started to write this book maybe two, three years ago, and suddenly I was writing about these wonderful figurines that are found of this sacred and the ancient woman, and they all have this small head and slightly bigger bosoms, and then they have a big big butt. And
yeah.
I had one of them, which was the Venus of Willendorf, in my hand. And as I was holding it, I thought, you know, they always describe these figures with very small hands or almost no arms, no feet, no legs. And they just said, well, they weren't relevant. And I thought, actually, I don't know why, but this looks like a bee.
Yeah.
Because the head dress is extremely intricate, and of course bees don't have long arms, you know, they're very thin arms and legs. And I realized that it just led me on, and that's how often I end up writing, is one thing leads to another. So I started looking up the queen bee and the bee goddess, and I thought there's a lot of relevance here to the bee here in understanding the pineal gland. And there had been connections between the bee, queen bee, being the guardian of the door between the dimensions.
Uh-huh.
And that honey and images of bees had been found in sacred places, such as the pyramids, when someone died. They were often buried with images of the bee. And it really felt that the bee, because of passing through the different stages, as the bee does, through the pupa, the larva, the pupa, and then into the adult, it obviously was that the bee was symbolic of our ability to pass through these various stages. And the bee queen, or the queen bee, has always been seen in that way. And then I went a little deeper, and I was moving or going to travel into Malta. And when I went to Malta, I couldn't believe, first of all, it's the most beautiful island, but bees are very important there. There's wonderful honey comes from there. But when you go to these ancient temples, many of which are 5,000 years old, 6,000 years old, older than Stonehenge, you see these little bee pits as if someone has actually taken a little bit of carving out of the stone. And as soon as I saw them, I went, oh, my goodness, this is a beehive. This is what they're trying to show me.
Yeah.
And all of the symbolism in these wonderful temples that were all designed in the shape of a woman, again, these three segments, the wider hips, then the breasts, and then the head, it was all in reference to the bee. And it was only then that I looked up the queen bee, and there was reference to the fact that Malta and the islands, Gozo and Camino, which are off the south coast of Sicily in Italy, were thought to be the most powerful mountains of Atlantis.
Really?
And that the people of that time built these temples, of which they were almost, they believe, I mean, this is again Graham Hancock's work,
Oh, yeah.
Maybe even 40 or 50 temples, which is an amazing number for a small area.
Yeah, he goes into that in the video I was referring to.
Yes, and you know, it was obviously what they built the temples, not for humans, because a lot of the temples on our planet were built before humans really came here, but they were used to be conduits for consciousness coming into the Earth. And
really?
It is believed that the Atlantean queen was called the Queen Bee, and that she used these temples to download information into the Earth so that the Earth could become a library of consciousness in the universe.
Well, you've got the pictures and the graphics, you know, of the multi temples, the different queens. You have a really interesting section in your book. I mean, I was really fascinating that, especially when you mentioned something that I knew, that it wasn't genetics that creates the queen bee. It's the drone, or whether the worker bee, they're just, you know, the larva that gets the royal jelly, the Swedish
right.
extract.
That's right. It, fascinating. I mean, it was just, who should we feed, you know?
Yeah. Do we need queen bee and with the superfood that's going to change their genetics so they're five times larger and live 10 times as long and lay thousands of eggs a day? Wow.
I know. I mean, so no wonder you're promoting the royal jelly.
Well, I've been taking it for 30 years, and it's served me well, and my family, my kids, you know, raised on them, their immune systems, and I've seen it and worked with it, and I can't actually say what it does and all the things that it does, because it sounds too much like a medical claim.
Yes, I know.
You know what I mean?
I know. It is remarkable, and if, as you say, we just say, look how, by feeding the royal jelly to these queen or to these young bees, they literally become the queen bees, and that's amazing.
They become super bees.
Story. Yes, they do.
They become the great mother.
they truly do, and they have attributes that the others don't have. That's the way to do it.
Yeah. Well, I tuned into that about 30 years ago, and that story. Read a lot of different books on, you know, just this miracle of nature. Mm. And when I read that section on the queen bee and this whole, you know, myth, this metaphor again, and throughout history, you know, the reference to the bee, and I guess even Napoleon wanted the beehive to be the national symbol of France.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the fleur-de-lis, was, you know, there was a connection to the bee, and he would wear that bee image, and even, you know, and Hitler and Himmler all fascinated by the bee, and you think, this is something that we need to look at here.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Well, you know, I know the Chinese emperors used to use that royal jelly. Now, they used to pay for it, and it's worth its weight in gold because they had to keep all those concubines happy, you know. I'm not saying it's natural Viagra, but it really helps to get the energy up with no big letdown, you know.
Well, there we go.
You had a section on your book that fascinated me, too. It was on the one of the things that really grabbed me, because I knew about this, the Iroquois Nation Constitution, the Great Law of Peace, and how they had matrilineal society, and I was just fascinated with this. I knew that Jefferson and Franklin, the founding fathers, were, they got into all of this, the Iroquois Federation and Iroquois Nation and the whole confederation of East Coast tribes. It was 13 tribes, I think it was. Thirteenth tribe was the priesthood tribe, but they were really into this understanding of the divine feminine as being the higher power.
right. That's right, and it's because what we've lost. So when the Iroquois Constitution came together, as you said, the peacemaker gathered together the grandmothers.
The grandmothers, yes.
You will be the spokespeople, the wise people. I'm not going to say the leaders, basically. And because I liked what I read and I wrote in the book, which was because only women know what it is to suckle a child at their breast and then have to bury them when they die.
That's right.
And therefore only women know what is worth fighting for and going to war for.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow. Imagine how our country would change.
Yeah, they really messed up when they did the whole balance of powers thing and set it up basically in a patriarchal way, and they messed up the checks and balances because there was still slaves, women didn't have any rights, and they just had it all backwards.
they messed it up fairly quickly, didn't they?
Yeah. And it's taken this long to come back to the point and recognize it. I mean, I think anyone that's in good conscience and looks at this, I mean, there wasn't a 10,000-year culture. I mean, I've read this before, that the Confederation had gone back for, there was records of it, or that it went back 10,000 years, and Jefferson went to Montauk Island.
Yes.
And found there was 3 submerged pyramids there, and that's quite a story. But he found out that that tribe, the Montauk Indians, were the 13th tribe, the priesthood tribe. And that they had a language, and this was really mind-blowing to me, that corresponded with a lot of the semantics to the Egyptian language.
Yeah.
And he lost all those papers. He was traversing a stream coming back, his research on this. But there's a book on Montauk that goes into this. And there's 12 tribes, and the 13th tribe, the priesthood tribe, and they were the shapeshifters. They were the ones that would go up in the,
Yes, that's fascinating. I'm not sure if he lost them or wanted to lose them, but
he
conveniently lost them. Oh, I'm sorry.
It's good that he lost them before he confronted all the left brain lockstep, patriarchs running the show in Washington D.C.
Oh, I agree. I mean, and the whole matrilineal idea, and that is, just to confirm, that isn't about power struggle. That is the handing down of property of understanding between the mother and the child.
That's right.
And it was really, very, as I wrote in the book, it was connected to mitochondrial DNA, which is also passed down between the mother and the child.
Uh-huh.
And what we know about the mitochondrial DNA is it's where our power is, it's where our energy is. And so it confirmed that only the healthy would live.
Yeah.
So, the idea that really I think the patriarchy got so upset because if every property and name was passed down to the child, then they were left out of the equation. And it was just really I want some of your property. I don't want you to have so much money.
That's
how it all changed.
That's what it was. And I think about that whole culture and the civility that they maintained. And
yes.
the concept of nurturing and raising up civilization, civility with cooperation and community.
Oh, that's nice.
That whole spirit of what they had and how the ownership and control values came in and just, the rest is history,
And to really just remind everybody that we didn't come from barbarians. We've actually gone the opposite way. In places like Mesopotamia, in Minoan culture, we know male-female energy was balanced and equal. We all had our roles. Women were much more to do with the spiritual, as you said, the metaphysical, religion. And the men were much more to do with the physical because they were much more able than the women. But nobody was jealous of another or thought anybody had more power. Even the king didn't have his images everywhere. He was just the king. That's what he did.
Yeah.
But, we lost that when we allowed this separation, this polarization to come in. And now I have to be in a hierarchical system to you rather than recognizing and respecting who you are, which, of course, is the future, which is our Aquarian age that's coming. But we want to understand that we were very civilized 5,000 years ago. It was only now that we seem to have lost the plot a little bit.
And this Graham Hancock gets into this also, that losing the connection with spirit is basically, that direct connection with spirit, cooperation, the spirit of community in our diversity, losing that has really been the cause of all of our problems.
Exactly. And that spirit is to be found, not, if I may say, through religion. I'm not putting every religion has basis of that. But you're not going to, it's not about the outer facade of religion that says if I meditate enough or pray enough. Spirit is within you. You don't have to go anywhere or give your power away to anything. the base connection is through your heart, and it's a loving spirit. Everybody has that loving spirit, the part of them that loves them so much. And if we can stop looking outside ourselves for that and start to look inside, that's really part of the healing.
I think that's the frequency of the Great Mother that is searching in the source field with heart coherence, right? The heart chakra, the heart center, you know, the most powerful magnetic fields that really run the brain.
Yes.
And we're returning to that. We're turning to that understanding, and more people are centering in their hearts and balancing their masculine and feminine. And we're going to have to do a wrap here shortly. But, Christine, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today. And I highly recommend anyone who has the... If they haven't got it yet, these two books, 2012, The Galactic Center, Return of the Great Mother, and The Healing Power of the Sacred Woman, are phenomenal for on the path of balancing. And for you males, you know, get in touch with your feminine side. And for your women, well, you know what to do.
And so the men, you know, to know what you help your women, you know, be the wonderful support that I have for my husband. You know, we women are needing to return to our feminine. We have lost it. We've forgotten who we are. So, but having loving men around us who are encouraging us is a wonderful gift. So we thank you for that as well.
No, thanks so much, Christine. And thanks, everyone, for listening. Happy trails until we meet here in a couple of weeks. Goodbye, everyone.